Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking, a mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hacker Factory podcast. Today I'm really excited to have Brett Kemp on, that I referred to as my BFF because she works for Bishop Fox. And we got to know each other through the InfoSec Twitter. And so we would share tweets and stuff for each other, interact, and we got to meet at DEF CON for the first time in person. But yeah, let's refer to her as my BFF. So welcome to the show, Britt.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is an honor to be on the Hacker Factory today. I'm excited.
Great to have you. And you've made some great recommendations on people in the past to be on here and always have good recommendations for guests. And I thought it'd be a good idea to have you on because there's so many different areas of cybersecurity that people don't think about. And, you know, marketing and community and social media are areas that people can work in that they don't think about sometimes. And sometimes maybe that's a way they pivot in, get into a company and educate themselves on cybersecurity while they're doing that. And then they can pivot in, or maybe they enjoy it and that could be a role for them. Because kind of like myself, I've kind of moved into more of the marketing stuff and I've really enjoyed it. So I think this is definitely one of those roles that would be great to discuss along with some of the other things that you're talented in that you could share that would be helpful for others just trying to get jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to talk about myself, what I'm seeing in the world, my experience, you know, anything that's useful to others and anything I can pass on. I'm just glad to be of service, I guess, which sounds a little corny, but it's the truth.
Yeah, I figured, I knew you'd be a good guest because the people that are trying to help people in the community are always good guests and have some great advice. So why don't we start with your background? Why don't you kind of share your story and kind of your education, kind of how you got into the role you're in?
Oh, man, it's a very interesting story. Well, it's probably not that interesting, but yeah, I started with my degree and actually, going way back. When I first started college, I was a print journalism major at Edinburgh University of Pennsylvania, which is a small state college up by Lake Erie. So it's not a huge school, but it's a pretty good school. It's called Penn West Edinburgh now, though, or Penn West. I actually don't know if it's Penn West Edinburgh, what they refer to themselves as now, but they've like merged a few other schools. Anyway, tangent aside, I majored in print journalism. I did that for a year. It was not a good fit for me. So I decided to pivot into studying writing and I minored in journalism. And I guess, ironically, I ended up heading the student newspaper my last year at Edinburgh, which was a really amazing experience for me. I think when I look back at like everything I did in college, that's the thing that really stands out. I couldn't tell you like when I learned in my anthropology class, for example, but that experience I had in the student newspaper really like helped pave the way for the rest of my career, I feel. And then, you know, I graduated and what was it, 2010, which was, I think, like very much the thick of the recession. So much luck landing a journalism job or any sort of writing job for quite a while. I did data entry for a bit. I worked in human resources. I walked dogs. I did all kinds of different things. I really had an interesting background. I worked at a zoo briefly. A monkey grabbed my arm once, which was an experience I'll probably never forget. But eventually, I found myself, confronted with a job at a SEO agency in about late 2011, early 2012. At the time, I was living in Erie, Pennsylvania, where I'm originally from, which is not too far from where I went to school. Anyway, the job was in Mesa, Arizona, and basically they told me, you have the job if you can move to Arizona, which, you know, they didn't want to cover any sort of relocation, whatever, which I now understand because it wasn't like a huge job. But at the time, I had a really good friend living in Arizona, so I decided to go live with her for a bit and see how this job fared out. I did it for about 2 years. It was kind of like a content editor position. There was a little bit of social media involved, but not much. So I was mostly doing a lot of writing, a lot of editing, working closely with a team of freelancers. We had clients in a variety of industries. We had clients in like the travel industry, the education industry, you know, healthcare. But we also had a cybersecurity client, which I actually was tasked with working with because I ended up like, you know, being able to get the content to the best degree that the client wanted. And I remember this is like one of my first experiences from cybersecurity, editing this article, and the writer was writing about phishing, and she referred to it as like, you know, fishing in the ocean, that kind of fishing throughout that entire article. So I remember being like, oh, this doesn't seem right. I don't think it's that kind of fishing. But that was my initial like brush with cybersecurity. And then, you know, a few months probably after that, I found the job for Bishop Fox was hiring a marketing assistant. And I remember reading the job posting on CareerBuilder, which I know still exists, but I don't think people talk about it very much anymore. Anyway, I was on CareerBuilder. I saw this job posting and I thought to myself, man, this seems like something that might be a little bit of a challenge. I'm not sure if I'm quite up for it, but I'm going to apply anyway. And lo and behold, I ended up getting the job in April of 2014. So I've been with Bishop Fox for going on the better part of a decade. So I've seen a lot of growth and transformation in that time. But I didn't immediately start out doing social media community stuff. I kind of grew into this role. And originally, I was doing kind of like a jack of all trades. I did a little bit of SEO. I helped with events. I did like, you know, PR a little bit. Like I got my hands in everything. And eventually, you know, my manager at the time was like, you're really good at content. I want you to focus on content. So I was like, okay, I'm focusing on content. I did that for a few years. And the whole time I was running in the background, I was running our social media. I was basically, you know, manning the LinkedIn and Twitter, everything pretty much on my own. And then eventually, like, you know, I had a new manager a few years later who asked me what I wanted to focus on. And at that time, I was very burnt out with writing. So I was like, I would just like to focus on social and community. Because something I really discovered at Bishop Fox was how much I enjoy engaging with people, which is weird because I was just telling Philip this, I'm an extroverted introvert. So I, you know, I definitely have my moments where I'm very shy. Like I get like, you know, nervous talking to new people. But online, that kind of like goes away for me. Like I feel much more social online. So being able to like interact with people on Twitter, Reddit, wherever, I just found it very, very enjoyable. And it kind of just like clicked that this was like a really good use of my skill set. There's some writing involved. There's some creativity involved. I like helping people. And there's a bit of doing that and being a social media manager, basically, because people will write to you and be like, hey, are you hiring for this job? Or like, hey, can you look at this? Or blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I mean, I didn't ever think when I was studying to become a writer and, you know, writing my poetry or whatever that I would end up in cybersecurity marketing, but it just kind of like clicked. And I mean, I really enjoyed it. I just, you know, for me, I think it's just the varied experiences throughout my life, you know, professionally speaking, and just being able to like pick up on things quickly, which I think, you know, is one of my strong suits that benefited me. And yeah, I mean, it's an interesting journey, but it's been a rewarding one. And I would recommend it if people are curious about like what it's like to work in cybersecurity marketing, specifically social media. I would say, you know, I know Philip knows this too. It's really, really rewarding. It could be challenging, but it can also be super just fulfilling. So
if someone wanted to get into a type of role like this, what would you recommend them do to prepare for that type of role?
Honestly, I think there's a bit of personal branding that you should definitely invest in, you know, having a polished LinkedIn profile, a portfolio, but also like, you know, getting yourself out there, networking with other people. Networking is so important. And I know, you know, like I can hear people groaning when I say that. And I can feel myself groaning inside too, because I'm like, networking. And, you know, it's like synergy and other buzzwords. But no, it is important because it's ultimately like, being able to learn from others, you know, pick others' brains, like share experiences. Honestly, like that's super helpful, especially in like rural, like cybersecurity marketing, cybersecurity, like community management stuff. It's a small world. It's growing because I can tell you in the past 9 years, like it used to be so niche what we did. And now it's really like opened up. There's a cybersecurity marketing society. You know, I been like amazed by how many people I see participating in cybersecurity marketing events. Like, it's really, really blown up. So definitely networking and building your brand, and also not being afraid to put yourself out there. I mean, like, you know, if you see someone on LinkedIn you really admire, like, oh, I want a career like that, you know, send them a connection request. Maybe you'll want to like add like a little like blurb, like, hey, like, I just want to like see if I could like learn from you or whatever, you know. And also too, seeing what other industries and other companies are doing, kind of studying that. And then too, like experimenting with your own social media, you know, like going on Twitter, joining Discord servers, like just kind of like treating yourself a little bit like you would a company and using that as like your beta testing. Like, oh, this didn't work or this did work, blah, blah, blah. And not being afraid too, to apply for jobs that you might not feel like quite qualified for. I would just say go for it. You know, you never know like what doors that might open. So I hope this makes sense to people. I feel like I'm just rambling.
No, not at all. That's some good stuff. And I like that you're saying to apply for jobs anyway, because one of the things people don't take in consideration sometimes is you might just be a good personality fit for a job. That was kind of like my first pen testing role. If I looked at the job description, I knew how to use vulnerability scanners. I'd worked in security, but I didn't have the pen testing or hacking experience. But when I applied for the job, the hiring manager liked that I had a home lab, that I did a lot of self-teaching, a lot of things I've kind of learned on my own. And all those things sound good. He liked my passion and curiosity to learn. He really liked all these things. He took a chance on me, and I got the role. Otherwise, I could have easily been turned down. But that's good that you mentioned that, to apply anyway, because you never can tell. And you know, you never can tell who wrote the job description. It could be HR. Maybe they really don't understand the role.
Yeah.
Or it's been so long ago that the role was written. Because right. One experience I had, a company that I worked for was trying to recruit a red team member for my team.
Okay.
And we couldn't. And so we was having a hard time finding people. In part, it was because of the job description. I went back and looked at the job description. Come to find out that actually you could tell that they had copied and pasted someone else's job description, because it still had the name of the company in there, but they were missing some key things, key elements that helped find someone for that role finally. But like you said, to apply for the jobs anyway. And I like, you know, the tips that you're sharing for people who are listening. This stuff's just as helpful for trying to find any kind of job as well, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I would say you'd be surprised where you could end up finding like employment opportunities. I'll go ahead and like shamelessly plug our Discord server at Bishop Fox, which is called RedSec by Bishop Fox, which long story into why it's called RedSec. But anyway, I digressed. We do have a channel in there that's like job opportunities. And like I go in there every time I see a job on LinkedIn, you know, it doesn't even have to be a Bishop Fox job. If it's something that's in the security industry or like tangential, I'll share it in there. I mean, so like Discord is one great example. And also too, like Twitter, just kind of like interacting with people on there too. I mean, you know, like back in the day, I forget how we first started talking, Philip, but we developed a relationship and then like a, you know, a friendship based on just interacting on Twitter and just like sharing each other's content, which I would say for somebody that's just starting out, or even if you're like switching to change industries, because I talk to a lot of people like, you know, in my day-to-day life that on my own who are thinking about like coming into cybersecurity or like, you know, getting into the tech field, whatever. And just getting yourself out there in the beginning and just kind of like exploring every possible outlet and seeing like, okay, maybe this is going to be like something that works out for me as far as like, you know, job leads go, or like just making those valuable connections that can help you in your career. And I will say one thing I just saw that fill up was when I was doing interviews back like a decade ago, when I first started like working at Bishop Fox, like right before then, I will tell you, on a few interviews, people didn't ask about my current job. They didn't ask about what I was doing at the SEO agency I used to work for. They asked about my blog, which I thought was really interesting because, I mean, it was just a passion project I had for years. I started it in 2009 and I wrote about music and pop culture of my friends. And eventually I still write in it because I love music. But eventually, you know, like it became this selling point in my resume that people wanted to talk to me about it because they saw, like, you know, for example, like way, way, way long ago, I did interview Taylor Swift for it. Like I did an email interview of her, or it could have been an agent. Who knows at this point? I did an interview of her and like it came up on my interviews where people were like, oh, yeah, so you run this pop culture blog and you talk to people like Taylor Swift. Can you like tell us how you've coordinated that and stuff like that? And that's nothing that have anything to do with things I was being paid to do, but I was doing it on my own because I love doing that kind of thing. And that ended up, you know, helping me get to where I currently am. So another, like, you know, helpful nugget is just kind of like nurture those passion projects, because you don't know if they're going to open a door or two for you.
And that's one of the things I don't think people think about too, because content creation has helped a lot of people build their brand, because I've seen people that basically got into security because of their YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah.
Or their Twitch streams and other things like that. But one of the things I think people forget about sometimes is that blogging, you know, writing is a type of content creation. I mean, it was probably the original content creation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Blogs were like huge. And I mean, I know people like Bishop Fox on the technical side that were hired partially and due to their like thought leadership, the security blogs they're writing, or, you know, they're finding CVEs, like the write-ups are doing on that, you know. And like when you say YouTube channel too, like look at people like John Hammond that are known like so widely from just their appearances online. So, I mean, there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing. But it's interesting to see, like, John Hammond had been around doing security stuff, and it took a while for his YouTube to catch on, because I had Heath Adams on, the Cyber Mentor.
Oh, yeah.
And he was talking about how, you know, because he kind of really got his start from content creation into security with John Hammond. He'd been around and doing it. It took a while for it to catch on. But I think probably what kind of prevented John from catching on sooner was, I think probably when he started, it was supposed to be, he's been doing this for over 10 years. It wasn't as popular then.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the timing of it all. But yeah, just the content creation and seeing what opportunities it's making for people. And so I've seen you doing, reviewing people's resumes to help them out when they're looking for a job. Are there any tips that you have for people's resumes?
Oh, goodness. This is a really good question. Let me think a little bit. I mean, I think the big thing I end up telling people, I just looked over a resume from my friend's wife the other day, and I remember like writing this in the comments because it just stuck out to me so much, was, you know, don't just speak to your day-to-day work when you're writing about your job experiences. Like, talk about the accomplishments that you did while you were there. Like, what did you launch? Like, how did you benefit the company? Not just like showing you're capable of doing the responsibilities, like the bare minimum, but also showing that like you can actually, you know, really like go beyond expectations, which is what employers want to see. So that's the big one. And I feel like I always harp on that. And I feel bad because at a certain point, I'm like, I always say this to people, but I just see it so often. So, and I like to like clarify, I do resumes for like, well, I help people with their resumes for a variety of industries. So I've seen people in the legal industry, I've seen people in the funeral industry, which was interesting. I've seen people in the cybersecurity industry too, you know. So there's some things that apply across like all of these if anyone that's not like in cyber is actually listening. But yeah, I mean, writing about what you've accomplished, making sure too that you proofread, I mean, just on your own. It's great to get another set of eyes, but spell check, you know, Grammarly, even just like having I personally love using text out loud. Like I just have the text read back to me. Microsoft Word has this feature. And for me, it helps me because sometimes I just don't see things for some reason. I don't know why my eyesight is not amazing. That's probably why. But I don't see like words or whatever. And like that was a big thing that I used to screw up all the time when I was younger. I would make typos and like always be missing words. Not so much misspelling things, but missing words. When I have it read back to me, I'm like, oh yeah, that does not sound like an actual sentence. So having some proofreading involved, definitely like reaching out to a friend, a trusted person, someone in your life that you like really like value their insight, just for another set of eyes. It doesn't even have to be like an in-depth review, just being like, okay, like, does this make sense? Does this seem coherent? Does this seem like professional? Did I miss anything? And I mean, the thing too, like I also see a lot is people having their resumes like 2 to 3 pages. I would just make sure like if your resume is more than one page, it's because you've been working for a while or you have a lot of them. You know, you have a lot of things that you could speak to. Like you're very involved in volunteering the cybersecurity community. I know that's a huge one. You're very involved in doing like CVE write-ups, whatever. Like making sure to like everything that you have on the resume needs to be there. And then I kind of run into sometimes people like putting references, which is not something that you need to do. I'm trying to think what else, but like anything that's really relevant to the job you're applying for or to the like industry you want to work in like, this case, cybersecurity, needs to be on your resume. even if you don't have a lot of experience, if you have the passion, I know at Bishop Fox, we've always like prided ourselves on hiring people with the passion for cybersecurity that have the experience, but we also really value the passion. So showing people that like you're really involved in cybersecurity, like whatever that means to you, if it's bug bounties, whatnot, having that on your resume is critically important, in my opinion. So I'm sure I'm leaving things out. These are the things that are like flashing in my mind right now as I talk to you.
Yeah, but very, very good advice and tips there. And also with your background, you know, what would be helpful too is people's soft skills. A lot of times people overlook the writing piece. So how can people improve their soft skills, including things like writing?
And how would you improve things like writing? Well, I think for me, like being a writer, like which is kind of the thing I've always been in my life. Like, you know, I've always really enjoyed writing. It's been like my soul, like, you know, passion as a child and adolescent, whatever. But the one way I always kind of feel like I brush up my writing is by reading other people's writing. And that doesn't necessarily mean you need to like read a novel or whatever, but find some writers like on like, you know, blogs, whatever that you really enjoy or admire, and just start reading those. And eventually, like in my opinion, it will kind of influence your style. It's not going to be like you're going to copycat them or plagiarize, but still, like you'll end up finding yourself inspired, at least in my case. And it doesn't even need to be like one person. If it's a brand or publication that you really like, for example, my coworker and I were just talking about this the other day, like how much we like Fast Company's content. Yeah, and then like read Fast Company articles and that will inspire you. As far as other writing advice I have, I mean, gosh, it's great to like, you know, have some like people in your network that are really good at writing or like editing or whatever. And then, you know, if like you're feeling maybe insecure about like something that you've written, working with them or like asking them for another set of eyes, or even like, you know, paying them a little bit of money, like $5 or whatever. $5 is a ridiculously low amount, so don't pay attention to that. But just so you know, trying to get like more perspective. And as for like, you know, feedback or like a really thorough critique, I've had some people in my life that have been really brutal critics of my writing. And I will say, like, I think my writing is so much stronger than it was 10 years ago because of these people.
Oh. Yeah, probably the critiques that probably helped me the most was pen testing reports, writing the reports, mm-hmm. and having someone to peer review it going back. That was something that really helped me improve my report writing. But it seems like also too, if you're getting in practice, and you know, we kind of mentioned some blogging and stuff. So, you know, it seems like another way that someone can improve their writing is if you start a blog, you know, write about security related topics, if that's the area you're wanting to get into, and, you know, maybe writing stuff on Medium, you know, to play around with it, get experience. And you can also see if people are interested in your content. And that's another good way to build your brand.
Oh, absolutely. And you can do a blog on LinkedIn. You can write articles on LinkedIn. You don't need to go out and launch something new. I think you might be able to do it on Twitter too, but I kind of like, I can't remember off the top of my head. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of ways to get your writing out there and just get some like, you know, eyeballs on it. See what resonates with people, what doesn't resonate with people. It's a very interesting experiment. Like one thing about like marketing, even if it's just like, you know, like putting writing out there, it's just seeing what people respond to and what they don't respond to and then learning from that.
What about as far as learning to leverage Twitter and LinkedIn better? Are there some good resources or things people should do to improve their connections on those platforms?
You know, LinkedIn, I always hear it's with like the big thing for people, individuals, is groups, like joining groups. You know, trying to get active on various groups in like your industry or things that you enjoy, or like, you know, definitely like certain fields. I'd also say like not being afraid to like network with people. Like, again, like I said before, but like sending networked requests to people that might be like from your company that you might not know very well, or people in your industry. And LinkedIn does a suggestion feature where I'll be like, these people went to your college. These people like used to work where you work. These people live in Phoenix, because I live in Phoenix. So it'll be like people that have my similar role who work at, you know, different companies, but they live in my area. And I'm not very like shy about sending connection requests to people I think are going to be like beneficial to know. Like, oh, I can learn from this person, or this person's a good connection to have. So I'll go ahead and add them. And I mean, like, you don't want to do that all the time, but like if there's some sort of like mutual like connection that you have, so, whether it's like school, work, whatever, I would say don't be afraid to reach out to people that you think can help you down the line. And as far as Twitter goes, I mean, goodness, Twitter is such an art, but I art's probably the wrong word to use, but you know what I mean. It's definitely it's hard for me to speak on it because I feel like Twitter was just something I kind of like learned over the years. I don't think I'm like a, you know, genius at it, but I think I've seen over time like what works and what doesn't work. And I know I personally, in my like personal day-to-day life, do not like hashtags. I kind of like deplore them as a person. But when I'm doing tweets for Bishop Fox, I'm like, well, okay, well, I need to use this tweet or this hashtag or this hashtag, blah, blah, blah. And seeing what other people are saying that's like similar to that hashtag, because that builds visibility. You know, people click on like InfoSec and they'll see all the InfoSec tweets. Same thing with LinkedIn. I actually would say I just read an article from Sprout recently, which told me that like LinkedIn, you're going to use plenty of hashtags. I've always been a little bit more like skeptical about LinkedIn's hashtag abilities, but doing that and also tagging people too, because people are more likely to share or respond to your content when they're like featured in it. And not a meaningless sort of feature. You know, if you have an article that you mentioned someone in, you might want to like tag them, just be like, FYI. And then, you know, they're more likely to like engage with it. But if you're just trying to find people too on Twitter, like kind of like LinkedIn to network with, I mean, just go through and start like following accounts that are like high profile and then, you know, go from there. Because usually what Twitter will do, or what it used to do, I'm not sure if it does it as much anymore, is like suggest other accounts that are similar. Just also don't be like afraid to post things on social that, you know, obviously be afraid about certain things because sometimes things should not be out in the world. You know, use your discretion, but don't be afraid to actually like get started. Because I have friends, you know, in my personal life I've talked to that I've been like, oh, I'm always so scared to post on Instagram because I don't think my content's good enough. And I'm like, honestly, at the end of the day, who cares? Just like put it out there, you know, be mindful and be like respectful and professional, but also just like, don't be afraid to like start making like a, you know, a brand for yourself, so to speak.
Yeah, very, very good advice. And it's interesting too, because I know there was a lot of, you know, some people getting off Twitter or leaving Twitter because of the whole Elon Musk thing. But one of the things I've noticed here lately is it seems like it's getting back to what it used to be or what I'd consider normal.
Yeah. I mean, I will definitely plug, you know, Mastodon. Mastodon's been great too. The InfoSec exchange community, it's been super wonderful. But yeah, it's been interesting watching the Twitter ebb and flow, you know, with Mastodon, because for a while, I think a lot of people thought that Twitter was just going to like die out. And we were all going to move to Mastodon or like Post or whatever else came out in that like sort of, you know, like that fallout. But I mean, Twitter is still like really useful. So I think some folks are still there because they still see some usefulness in it. You know, some people have like pulled back a little bit. Some people have returned fully. It's interesting to see how like folks are reacting to it. I mean, I personally think Twitter is really useful, so I hope it doesn't go away. But yeah, it's been a interesting time in the social media world.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed was because back there at first when there was kind of the mass exodus of people that either deleted their accounts or just quit participating on Twitter, that I noticed I could see a difference because I had like a steady growth of followers. So I know I was picking up, you know, probably 100 followers every week or every couple of weeks. And all of a sudden it kind of slowed down.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, whenever they talked about reinstating certain people, mm-hmm. One day I noticed all of a sudden I'd lost 100 followers, and I keep track of my followers, because one of the things that happens is some companies will follow you, you follow them, and they unfollow, and they do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I follow most people back to be nice.
Same.
And so I track who's following, who's not. And that also to kind of gauge what I'm posting, if it's helping my brand and helping build my following. So I keep track of that. And I noticed one day I lost about 100 followers. And I thought, what the heck's going on? So I went and looked at that unfollow app, and it wasn't that people unfollowed. It's just the people had obviously deleted their accounts or disabled accounts, that they were gone. So, but one of the things I'm noticing is that uptick and that the speed of gaining followers is starting to get back the way it was for me.
Yeah. No, that's interesting that you say that, because I definitely have noticed that from my personal account and from, you know, the Bishop Blocks account. I've seen like you know, like we really hit a wall in like November, December of last year. And now it's sort of like it's slowly creeping back up, but like it's not quite as it was. But yeah, you're right. Like those events directly correlate to people removing their accounts or people like, you know, maybe they all of a sudden like unfollow a bunch of accounts or only following a few select accounts. So yeah, I mean, Twitter, like I said, it's still useful. I think people are going to continue to use it. But yeah, I mean, for the time being, I think we can expect sort of this like tug of war between Twitter and the alternatives for a while. But I mean, I personally have enjoyed using Mastodon. I think it's really useful. I think the community is very friendly there. And I've seen definitely some traction on there, but it's definitely, like I said, like a bit of a tug of war, so to speak.
At least the one good thing about Mastodon, it's easy to find the security community because there's like a couple specific servers because like InfoSec Exchange, and then you also have the one DEF CON created. So at least that's easier when you're trying to find InfoSec people with those specific servers in general.
Yeah, they're very well curated, that's for sure.
So we're getting down towards the end of the episode. Is there anything you'd like to share before we close it up?
Oh, goodness. Well, I would like to give Bishop Fox a few shout outs. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we have a Discord server, and I would welcome anybody that's like interested in learning more about Bishop Fox, or, you know, not necessarily, but if you want to learn more about the cybersecurity community or like, you know, what's out there in InfoSec or find a mentor, consider joining the Discord server. I will send Philip a link afterwards. And as well, too, for Bishop Fox, we have a webcast this coming February 21st, which will be looking at a vulnerability in detail from our technical folks. The vulnerability is a Zimbra path traversal vulnerability. He'll be going through an exploit. It's going to be really interesting technical content, so I would highly recommend joining the webcast if you're available. And if you're not, the recording will be available online later, so you can still sign up for it, whatnot. And then next month, we are doing a Lady Hacker the Fox Den webcast, and it'll be on International Women's Day. It'll be with several of our Bishop Fox lady hackers, I guess, for lack of a better term. And it'll be a good little roundtable. I'm really excited for that one. It's called Defend Like a Girl. And they'll be talking about their experiences in cybersecurity, how to get involved, you know, like just it's a really good resource for people that are interested in like, you know, enhancing their careers or possibly just joining the industry. And as well, I know Philip mentioned too, you know, people might not be aware of the other opportunities in cybersecurity. Like you don't necessarily have to be a hacker or a pen tester or whatever. There's tons of other opportunities that are available. And next month, we'll be doing a webcast, well, not webcast, a video series with different women at Bishop Fox who do like legal work, who work in sales, whatnot. We have an editorial team. They'll be involved as well. So yeah, I mean, like that'll be really cool. So stay tuned to our social media, probably like mostly Twitter and LinkedIn for that. And I think that's all I got, but feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn if you heard this and thought I was interested.
Yeah, one of the things I have to say as well, too, one of the things I love about Bishop Fox is the great content, the blogs on how to use different tools and about different people in the industry. It's been a great resource because one of the things I think from a marketing perspective that people can learn a lot of lessons from, and I've tried to share this other places I've been before, is you take companies like Bishop Fox or NetSpy. They share a lot of stuff on tools. I would say Bishop Fox does a lot more towards the community side, but there's a lot of great tools that are being written, blog posts, and useful information that honestly, it's helping the community. It's not really, you know, you all are doing, you know, consulting services for pen testing,
right?
But it's, you know, that you really don't have to do this, but it brings from, you know, the positive effect you have is people see that you're doing things for the community, for the industry, and that's respected. But, you know, it's a very useful, you know, service that you're providing, and it's something you don't have to do because, you know, this is towards practitioners, not really the people that are, you know, purchasing the services. But I think it's great. And like I said, it's a great place to get information from on how to use different tools. And I know I enjoyed the Nuclei series on how to use Nuclei. And I know you all write some Nuclei templates there too. So
we are very happy to get back and be involved with the cybersecurity community. It's one of the things I think I'm most proud of with Bishop Fox is how, like, you know, we definitely at the end of the day, like, we really do like care about making a difference. And it's heartening to hear you say that, Philip. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for joining. I appreciate you being my guest today.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I hope everyone listening has a good rest of their day whenever they hear this.
Well, thanks everyone for joining, and we'll see you on the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itsbmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.